Friends, what I was saying essentially was this, that the main storyline of the duel is expressed in the subtitle, Pakistan on the Flight Path of American Power. This is a book essentially about the tangled web, the relationship, political, military, between the United States and Pakistan from the early 50s to the present day. And this has now become a critical relationship with the decision by President Bush, made in July, that the US Army in Afghanistan can cross the Pakistani border whenever it wishes to, in hot pursuit or not in hot pursuit, without informing the Pakistan government. This is a total breach of Pakistani sovereignty. It's a breach of Pakistani sovereignty and should not be accepted by either the military or the government. It's unacceptable. The recent opinion polls carried out in Pakistan by the New America Foundation show that 70% of the population of Pakistan regards the US as the main danger to peace in the region. 70%. Where is this 70% represented in Parliament? That's the question we have to ask. Look, I know that people here, everyone will not agree with everything in this book. Why should they? We are all independent-minded people. It'd be very strange if people present here agreed with every single thing in the book. So we can have differences. That's not a problem. But the differences should be based on some understanding of what politics in Pakistan has become. We are not in the 50s or the 60s or the period of mass mobilizations which kept politicians under pressure. We are in a period where politics is largely played on the top in Pakistan and the ordinary people do not matter. Human life is cheap in our country. The most shocking thing which you'll find in this book relates to one statistic which shook me when I read it in the UN Development Report, that 60% of Pakistani children, 60%, 60%, 60% of our children born in Pakistan are born stunted. The height of the average Pakistani is now coming down because of what? Malnutrition, lack of proper facilities, no prenatal care. 60%, it's a shocking figure. And it's a terrible indictment of the political military elite which has been running the country and getting rich themselves and ignoring the condition of the people. That is my charge against Pakistan's political class. You've grown rich. Even that people would have accepted if you'd done something for them. But you did nothing. The education system, as I told you last time, is in an unbearable condition. There is no health system worth speaking of. There is a big fight for land. Food prices are now so high of basic foods which our people eat that even middle class people can no longer afford the food prices of wheat every day. This is the situation in Pakistan. And what are they going to do about it? I'll tell you what they're going to do about it. Nothing. Like they've done for the last 60 years. Nothing. Grow rich, buy apartments on every continent, don't care about the wishes of the people or the needs of the people. That's the situation. And that's what makes me angry, especially with politicians who should know better. Politicians who formed their party on the basis of food, clothing and shelter, roti, kapra aur makan. That's why I was angry. You have to understand that. With me, it's never personal. I was very fond of Benazir. I knew her well since she was 10 years old. I have nothing personal against her. I'm not like that. I don't hold personal grudges. But I hold a very strong grudge that you were in power twice and you did very little. and your husband became the second richest man in the country, amassed a great deal of wealth, and then tragically you bequeathed your party to him. Since when are we in the business of bequeathing political parties to our family? This is going back to the Middle Ages. That's why I'm angry with her, and angry with this tradition. Pakistan has had enough of uniforms and political dynasties. We need politics of a different sort. The politics that was typified by the judges' movement, the lawyers' movement, the constitutional movement, that made... that gave young Pakistanis more pride than anything that has happened in their lifetimes. I spoke to so many young people in Pakistan. They said they were proud of their judges. They were proud of what the lawyers were doing. When else do they say that? And even this small thing of having a chief justice who was prepared to implement the law equally for rich and poor alike, to call the police to order when they disappeared people off the streets, this judge was not tolerable. And there was the chief justice wrote an open letter to the President of the United States, the President of the European Union, numerous other people. No reply. Now just imagine, if in a country which the United States doesn't like say Venezuela or Bolivia, if, let us suppose if it was a country the US doesn't like Venezuela or Bolivia or Ecuador or Russia, because they don't like Russia now because it started mimicking them. What would have happened if one of these countries had dismissed the entire judiciary of the Supreme Court and there was a big lawyers' movement? You would have had coverage every single day on the American media saying, look, this is what they've done. Look, this is what they're going, this is how they're oppressing. Human Rights Watch would have produced, you know, little books about these atrocities. But because it's Pakistan, a friendly government, they don't care. In fact, we know that the US ambassador told Zardari and Nawaz Sharif, we don't want the Chief Justice back. The Chief Justice, the dismissed Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, was offered inducements. Why don't you become a judge at the International Court of Justice in Europe? Big money, cars, perks. He said, no, thank you. Perhaps you would like a consultancy at the Harvard Law School. No, thank you, said the Chief Justice. All I want is to get my job back. And that they couldn't tolerate. So, you know, in the old days, we could get a lot of material like this published in the press. 30, 40 years ago, it could have been. Now you can't. Especially where the global media networks have a stranglehold. You can't do it, so we have to write books to get the ideas over. And Shaiv Comrade was right. Colin is my old friend and my old editor in many other publishing houses, so we've got this book out. And the reason to write the book really is to try and tell the truth. I mean, when you have a situation in this country where the Pakistani ambassador to the United States should in reality be the American ambassador to Pakistan. Just think about it. Because he's more interested in defending US interests than the needs of Pakistan.
Shame on that.
Shame.
You see, I see you laughing and you think it's quite a naughty thing to say, but it's true, isn't it? Isn't it? Yeah, and you know that and I know that. But that's the situation where we've arrived at in Pakistan. Now, no one has mentioned it so far, but I assume you know that there was a big explosion in Islamabad at the Marriott Hotel. The largest five-star hotel in the country has been blown up. No one has yet claimed it, but it is a sign of what is going on in that part of our country. These are the consequences of the war in Afghanistan. A war which many people in this country think is a good war, unlike Iraq, which was a bad war. And a consensus has been built up that this is a good war which we can all support. A consensus shared by both political parties and their candidates. And this is an unacceptable political consensus, because I'm sure if you look at the intelligence reports coming in from Afghanistan, and sometimes they leak out, they say this is an unwinnable war. We can't win it. The war in Afghanistan has already been lost. And this should be recognized instead of expanding that war further. Because I tell you something, if the United States carries on attacking Pakistan, you could have one of two things. Either the Pakistani military will not do anything, in which case something will happen which hasn't yet happened in the history of that country. There will be a division inside the heart of the Pakistan army, because there will be many Jawans and many officers who will say, we cannot tolerate this, it is unacceptable. And were the Pakistani army to split, you will have chaos and civil war. And what we are seeing now will be nothing compared to what will happen to the country if there is no firm action taken to stop the United States from entering Pakistan with its military. So we have to say this very openly, and actually it's in the US interest as well. It's a tragedy that no one spells it out for them from the Pakistani political military establishment. It should be spelled out for them. You know, there is no danger of any tiny jihadi group capturing Pakistan's nuclear facility. Why? Because the Pakistani army is 500,000 strong, because the nuclear facility, like in this country, is heavily guarded, like it is in Israel, like it is in China and India. No small group with or without beards can capture it. Unless the army wants it to. That is the only way in which any group could get hold of the nuclear facility. And to provoke the army, to provoke anger within the army by short-sighted and foolish and unthought-out policies will damage US interests as well, even though they may not recognize it at the present time. It'll definitely damage Pakistan, we know that, but it'll damage the United States as well. And we say this to them because they never knew in the late 70s and 80s, when they were fighting the holy war against Russia, that many of the people they were supporting would one day turn against them. They didn't think about the future, always thinking about the present, immediatism. And so we say again to the United States, and especially the citizens of the United States, who we have to win over to our ideas. They're a crucial constituency in the world. And say to them that if the US goes into Pakistan, if some nutty people are saying the Afghanistan war should become the Afghanistan-Pakistan war, were that to happen, the consequences would be horrendous for all concerned. So one is saying openly to the United States, don't do it. It is an extremely foolish thing to do. I'm not going to say anything else, except I just want to end by reading a poem for you, which I translated from the Punjabi. It's a Punjabi poem written by Fakhar Zaman, one of our great poets, Punjabi poets. And it's a homage to the people of Pakistan, because he writes about what they have suffered and how they have resisted. And I end my book, because Pakistan's satirists, writers, poets are the conscience of the country. It is our poets who have kept the morale of the people high all over the country. So this is what the poet writes, the Punjabi poet Fakhar Zaman. How can he who lost his eyesight paint? How can he who lost his hands sculpt? How can he who lost his hearing compose music? How can he whose tongue was cut out sing? How can he whose hands are tied write poetry? And how can he whose feet are fettered dance? With muffled nose and mouth, how can one inhale the scent of flowers? But all this has really happened. Without eyes we painted, without hands we sculpted statues, without hearing we composed music, deprived of a tongue we sang, handcuffed we wrote poetry, with fettered legs we danced, and the fragrance of flowers pierced our muffled mouths and nostrils. Thank you.